the Norwegian method.
I'm Olav Alexander Bu, peak human performance developer, coach to Christian Blumenfeld and Gustav Eden.
I'm Dr. David Littman, a health and human performance specialist. Welcome to the Norwegian Method podcast. Welcome to the Norwegian Method podcast, and thanks to Morten, Leaders in Endurance Fueling, for sponsoring today's episode. Check the show notes for links and details of a one-time 20% off code to use at morten.com on orders of the 1/52 collection, a one-week training pack. Welcome back to the Norwegian Method podcast. This episode, I'm of course joined by Olav, and we are talking nutrition, an area that I think people will be very interested to hear from you, particularly given your physics approach to things. I think there'll be some challenging viewpoints here, and I think that's a good thing, not a bad thing. I think this is a conversation we need to have. Let's start probably one of the questions people will be most interested in, which is about fasted training. Talk to me about fasted training in the context of people who need to optimize body composition.
I think there are many views on this. I don't necessarily hold, or I'm not sure if I hold the answer to this, but to then go back a little bit to first principles, first order. Mm-hmm. In order for anything to be combusted, for any calorie to be burned, some work have to happen. The body needs energy to survive or to maintain its properties. And the more muscles you have on your body, the more energy that will require. Fats on your body doesn't require energy, but muscles do. And further also, in order to grow muscles, you actually need energy. And if you go into a faster state, now, of course, simplifying it, you can't expect to have very much muscle growth. Let's say maybe you're losing
body fat,
but you will not grow muscles as quickly as you could do if you were in a well-nourished state.
I'm just going to stop you there. Listeners are thinking, great, now I'm going to lose muscle as well, and that'll make me lighter, and I'll go faster as a result of it. But what you're, I think, just to perhaps clarify here, that muscle growth, you're kind of black boxing things, which is the body will optimize composition for output if we go faster, right? So if we put in enough calories, we'll develop enough power, and we'll go fast enough, the body will optimize what that composition is in that context, regardless of where you start, provided you give it enough calories. Is that a fair thesis there?
All systems can be abused, to put it that way. Yep. Even the performance model, as I talk about it, it can also be abused if you don't put it into, or you don't have the right mindset or the right way, or as I call it, what's the right way? But anyway,
if you misuse it, it won't work.
Yeah. So again, it's very easy to become too mechanistic around how everything works. And again, we also have to remember that it's fine as long as you measure an input and output over time, because then you can just black box things in between there and you're just looking for a change. Yep. So if that change is, for example, changing your body composition, you have to ask yourself, okay, is that what you want to do, or is it become faster? You can maybe say, oh, well, I want to change my body composition in order to become faster. Then I would say, okay, I would then still focus on like directly becoming faster and what is needed to become faster, not trying to change something and hope you're getting faster. Because if you say that you're going to change your body composition by, for example, losing fats, for example, and that will make you faster, I'm not entirely convinced whether that will work. But if you make sure that you are putting in place all conditions required in order for you to actually execute better and better on your training session. Of course, we talked about stagnation, these kind of things, but again, yep, Focus on providing the best conditions for growth, then I think also your body composition will change. Again, if we say that the body is like really not very effective in pure efficiency terminology in turning around calories to propulsion, or even work.
That's because we'll take about 20% of those calories for work if you're very efficient.
No, if at a certain level, you will become quite efficient or turning around calories to work. But we can say that based on all the measurements we have done on different groups with gold standard equipment, we basically see that the efficiency lies around, let's say, if we use a simple number as before, 20%.
Yep.
That means also that if you are going to a faster state and you are not able to increase your power output, the problem with that is that, yes, you will lose fats. Mm-hmm. Your watts per kilogram might get better. Mm-hmm. But you have no clue whether actually your watts per kilogram improves sustainably because sustainably means also that you still have to have a very good oxidative or system that allows you to burn fats also very efficiently, so you have a high utilization of oxygen at, for example, your race pace. But I think that the body, this is something that we don't know enough about yet, but it seems like there's a pretty good correlation between every time we have in the past tried to reduce the weight of the athletes, and we have done it in conservative ways, we've done it over time, we have done it multiple times, we've done it with multiple people and groups, and that is that it seems like every time we reduce weight, and I'm not talking about doing it now drastically or in any extreme.
You're doing it in a smart way because they still have to train.
Exactly, and by methods that has been established by over a long time, for example, in the Olympic Federation.
Yep.
Then I would say that one of the problems we have discovered is that when we do this, also absolute VO2 max goes down.
And it should go up because your body mass changes. So. Yeah, you said absolute, not relative. So
exactly.
Yeah. So absolute VO2 max goes down.
Goes down, but actually relative VO2 max goes down as well.
Well, that should go up because that's per kilogram. It's normalized per kilogram.
Exactly. And that's why for a power meter, the power meter doesn't see where the energy comes from. It just turns, it basically is just an input, a muscular input into a system to just measure how much work you do, not where what kind of substrates are used in order to do that work. And that means also that what I'm trying to say here is that one of the things that happens when the body maybe goes into a faster state is it starts to shift more onto becoming good at using glycogen, because there is probably a more easy, because when you are resting, even though you're in a faster state, it's not you're going to be without carbohydrates in your body, because the body will always constantly convert even fats into glycogen in your body by resynthetizing your glycogen stores and so on. So you're always going to have carbohydrates available. And when you are into a faster state, obviously what probably the body will sense, I don't know, but is that there is now a starvation process going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And the body will at some point probably try to protect itself. Don't ask me about the mechanism behind this, because I have my hypothesis around it, my theories, but this is a place where I feel that there are so much more to be learned. The reason why we haven't spent more time on trying to like really dig deeper into that, because that's not going to move the needle for us. It's not going to make us faster. It's just going to increase the understanding for why we shouldn't do it, while we know now you shouldn't do it.
Yep.
So that's why we don't do fasted riding, for example. The ultimate consequence of this is that, yes, your watts per kilograms goes up because you're losing kilograms and the watts stays the same. But the problem is that you don't know what substrates are being used or how are those watts being produced. And if you produce those watts less sustainably by burning more calories as in form of carbohydrates, that's not very sustainable. And for most people, they are racing long enough, especially when we're talking about triathlon, that actually glycogen stores are a limitation to your performance. So my advice would be first of all, we don't obsess over where does the calories come from either. Like if you look at the boys, they drink Red Bull, they drink soft drinks, they drink.
But that's because their limit is calorie input, right?
Exactly, but that's I would say for mostly everyone, calorie input is a limitation, because it's not only about calorie input, it's actually about calorie uptake ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can feed in a lot of calories, but it doesn't mean necessarily that those calories are something that you will be able to utilize for propulsion, because food's also to be stored in the body. It goes through different processes. Some macronutrients get stored much easier in the body. So for example, fats, there is almost a one-to-one ratio. If you eat a gram of fat, it stores as 1 gram of fat in the body. For carbohydrates, obviously there is a range. It depends probably a little bit also on what kind of carbohydrates you are eating, but let's say that you are left with 0.9 grams. So 1 gram is maybe 0.9 grams stored in your body. But of course, what you get back is that it's more efficient to burn carbohydrates and convert it into ATPs than it is for fats, for example, per milliliter of oxygen. Because you have to remember that in the moment, the main limitation is not your fat stores or carbohydrate stores. That's a capacity problem more. Like over time, that's a problem for you. But in the moment, converting any substrate into ATPs that you need like now, that is most efficiently done by carbohydrates. So for example, if you look at now basically per milliliter, because if you go harder now, like the acute problem for you will be to get enough oxygen in and utilize enough of that for ATP production. So again, what really happens, I'm not going to speculate on that, but what we see again and again and again is that basically every time we try to reduce the body weight, even conservatively speaking, over a long period, we're not even going to the places where a lot of Tour de France cyclists are. We are still mm-hmm. staying on the conservative side also when it comes to weight. We basically see that the body starts to lose absolute VO2 max faster, then basically your weight is reduced. So basically both your absolute VO2 max goes down and even your relative VO2 max, so basically VO2 divided by your weight, even goes down. So even you can say that if you lost some VO2 max, but you lost weight faster than you lost absolute VO2 max, then okay, you're fine. Relative goes up. But the fact here is that it doesn't. You are even losing that faster than what you're losing your weight.
So one of the things I had there, you mentioned that maximum and relative VO2 max go down. But you also mentioned watts per kilogram go up.
Yeah.
Neither of those are performance metrics. What happens to speed? Or velocity?
Yeah. So that's a difficult part of it, because the thing is that we have to give an example. Christian is fairly massive compared to Alex Yee, for example. Still, he powered so violently away over the last kilometer in Tokyo Olympics, despite his weight, and you would even say that he doesn't have the body of a triathlete or an extreme endurance athlete. The same you could also say, Gustav is also actually leading into Kona. He actually also put on quite a bit of weight, so he is at his heaviest.
Muscle or fat or both?
Both.
Okay.
And the same goes with Christian as well. Both of them are big guys. The funny thing is that even when we have been on training camps, people come over and they just see, of course, these guys running around on the track, and there is something that doesn't make sense at all in their head, because they're like, that guy there that is running there, like, is he a speed skater? Because he should really consider like doing endurance sports. Yes, that's the Olympic champion in triathlon.
Yeah, yeah.
so that comment have actually come from other Olympic groups, but they are living in their bubble. They don't pay attention to other sports like we do, and so on. So, but I think I can only speculate, and my speculations are that the reason why we ended up with this hype or this continued, I would call it a hype, but it's not, well, but it's a very long-standing hype or tradition, you can even call it now. And that is that losing weight or improving watts per kilogram, it's, call it a little bit the poor man's way of just saying that, hey, my program is the best program in the world. You don't respond anymore now. And the only way now to increase your performance is that we have to drop your weight. Instead, rather looking at, okay, so how can we increase your power? And you start then in the wrong order. So instead of actually looking at how can we raise the power, and actually that means maybe increase the weight of the athlete, you actually do the opposite. You start to starve that person from it. And think about this way. I'm going to make it a little bit black and white here. If you don't eat at all, at some point you won't perform. At some point you won't be able to grow any more muscle mass. It would be rather the opposite. You will start to reverse. You will start to lose muscle mass and other vital functions in your body. For any growth to take place, we have also to know that it doesn't grow exponentially. It goes rather the opposite, inverse exponentially. In the beginning, when you start training, everything goes very quickly. You notice rapid progress, but at some point we are diminishing return on investment. And this means also that things takes longer time. We have to be more patient to also see sometimes like measurable returns on the investments we make. And that means also that increasing weight might sound counterintuitive, much like in a car, you're thinking, oh, watts or power or kilowatts per weight, for example, for the car as well. But we are organic creatures, meaning that we need fuel to grow. A car doesn't grow. It basically just burns fuel through it, produces heat and mechanical. We actually need also food, not for only producing heat and mechanical power, but also actually for growth, recovery. And that's what makes this fascinating. But when you then starve the body, you will also not continue to grow. Rather the opposite. You will maybe, worst case, start losing muscle mass. You will lose the ability to recruit muscle fibers or utilize functions of your body, worst case. And that's why I think that if you really are committed to what you do and you want to be the best, you want to find your peak human performance, that means you have to find a sweet spot where most likely you have to increase your body weight. And then at some point, but probably many more kilograms than what you even are thinking that this should be smart, first then you will start to see that, well, now I'm not able to increase anymore in power. I'm not able to increase my absolute VO2 max anymore. And I'm just gaining more, a little bit more weight there. It might even still be beneficial for you in the long term, but going the other way and thinking that, yes, okay, I'm extremely lean now, very low fat percentage, and thinking that now you should go to a faster state to even improve that one is probably most likely not the way to go for anyone.
It also ignores the endocrine system, human emotions, all those things. And again, it does work on a short-term time frame, but so much of what we've talked about is actually not about this day or this week. It's this day, this week, in context of this month, this year, and this four-year cycle or longer. Yeah. So it's about the sustainability of that approach. So that's why you do intensity control. It's not because we couldn't do more work today. It's so that we can do more work in the long term.
Exactly.
We are brought to you today by Plasmade. Plasmade is a proprietary liquid performance and recovery supplement formulated using only one active ingredient, French Maritime Pine Bark Extract, aka PBE. PBE is an adaptogen which triggers your body to produce a stabilized form of nitric oxide, which is a powerful vasodilator, improving blood flow to muscles and the brain. Plasmade is for use pre and post exercise, augmenting other energy and hydration supplementation used. In addition to all of this, Plasmade also has powerful anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects, which aid in recovery from training and competition. For your 25% discount on Plasmade and to learn more, head to the show notes.
And that, or back to that as well, food is sometimes also a big motivator for many people. We like eating food. And if we are in a starved state where we also become a little bit like psychologically, we lack a little bit of motivation. Think about it this way. The reason for why you actually progress also is because you also have that motivation to put out that little bit extra. And if you don't have that, that is also going to hold you back from growing. So this is, again, it's advanced, complicated, complex. It's not easy. But again, I think like it helps looking a little bit at from the view where you need food in order to grow. It is that simple. And at the moment you start to starve yourself off or to try to reduce your weight, the likelihood that you will continue to grow now is so small. You can say, yeah, but I have plenty of fats on my body. Yeah, but your body won't use that fat to make you faster if you are going into a state where it basically doesn't know whether it will get food anymore. Yeah. Then it will go more into a protective state. And worst case, that leads also to long-term other disadvantages that you actually are not aware of. So for example, there are actually, quite interesting enough, there was some studies done on people that had lived under starvation. So we have this, you could ultimately say that it's about calorie intake and calorie outtake on one side when we talk about weight management. It's not as easy as that because some people has an extremely, because there are many steps of efficiency in the body, biomechanical efficiency, biochemical efficiency, but you also calorie uptake efficiency. There are many ways to look at it or where you can measure efficiency. But one place where it's very difficult to do that, or it is a brute force and approach to it, but this is of course why we take all the feces and then we put them in the bomb calorie meter and we burn it.
Because I've got a question about that coming up.
So, but it means basically some people, they don't have the same energy uptake efficiency. So when you put in, let's say you put in 500 calories, some people will be able to take up much more of those calories in that food than others do. That's why some people can simply eat more than others because they don't take up the same. But this is also not static because it will also depend a little bit on what kind of food you're eating. Some people will take up more calories from some kinds of food, some of others. This comes down then also to the microbiome or the gut,
which is also something that's malleable and changes over time based on intake.
And is exactly very plastic as well because that's also it was quite interesting. It was a paper published in Nature several years ago on marathoners, and it was, I don't remember exactly which marathon it was, maybe it was New York or Boston Marathon or something like this, but I think they took like the 10 best marathoners and then they collected feces from them And then they took feces from, I think, big group random runners outside of that one. One of the differences that they found there, a notable difference they found there that was quite interesting, was they found that the elites had a 10, I think it was like 10%, don't hold me accountable for the numbers here, but at least what they found was that there was a notable and significant difference in the ability to use lactate or actually for the gut. It had much more diverse microbiome, and one of the microbes they found there, or enzymes, was far better at actually using or recycling lactate than the people that were not elite. And then you can think of why was it like that? Was it born with it? Not, probably not. They're just training much more than the others, so the exposure to lactate in their their gut and intestines was much more frequent, and then of course this will then maybe
cultivate the environment for it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and that's the same thing here. Also, when you go into a fasted state, you are basically probably reducing your bacterial diversity, meaning that because it costs maybe too much energy, the body can't prioritize that, and those few, let's say that reduction to that one will maybe put higher stress on that microbiome or that those bacteria that are left there, but they again become more efficient on maybe exactly utilizing those that little food that you are getting in there. But now going back again, so it is such a complex topic, and it's such a place where people are really starting now to get more insight, more knowledge about this topic. But it is so complex that it's something that we can't afford spending a lot of time on. We rather have to be more sensible about it, meaning that if you look at it from a first order principle, for anything to grow, it needs energy. And if you deprive it from energy, meaning calories in this context, how can you expect it to grow?
Yeah. So speaking about the intimate understanding you have of your athletes from, you know, caloric output as well as absorption, et cetera, putting things in the bomb calorimetry sensor, age groupers can't do this. What would you advise as an approach for them? Is it as simple as just eat as much as possible to sustain yourself? Or is there something more nuanced in there than that? And it might not be any more nuanced than that. It might just be, listen, if you don't know what you're burning, you're probably burning a lot more than you think.
I think it's far better to be a little bit overweight and be consistent in your training than training and trying to reduce your weight. Because if being a little bit of overweight or and eating a little bit more than maybe what would be ideal, to put it that way, I think that you'll stay much more healthy, both physiologically and psychologically, this way than the other way around. And what we are all looking for is like happiness or enjoyment and fulfillment, and that we are in a place where we really like doing what we do. And if basically what you do is that every time you go out training, you are not very motivated for it because you lack energy. On the other side, you also know when you come back home, you're going to starve yourself off. You're not going to eat what you would like, or you're reducing that. It's not a very sustainable situation.
Yeah.
So
just for context for the listeners, we are talking about the top pointy end of people here in terms of if we look at a population that, you know, many people in our population or in the world's population may not have the same answer here because they may be very overfed, poor body composition. You're talking about a spectrum of triathletes here who on the spectrum of the world sit in the very lean end of things.
I would say even not there, because in any, like for any athlete or any age group or any amateur, if basically eating and being overweight makes you still go out and train because you got energy, then do that, because I'm fairly sure that it's even better to have a BMI over 30 but you still get out every day and you're exercising, than trying to, like, say, oh no, I need to lose my weight, and then you go out and at the same time training. Because training is not like people jump around and say, hey, fantastic, I'm going to go out and train. Even elites like Christian and Gustav, yes, it's nice to be out on your bike and this kind of thing also, but there is also this...
It's still hard.
It's still as hard, yeah.
Yeah.
And you need to be motivated for it. So I would say that it's far better to eat and be overweight, but you're training and you're getting regular exercising. You even go out and you do quite a lot of hours per week than trying to lose weight. Because I think that a healthy body is a strong body. And a strong body can still be a strong body with quite a bit of fat on the body, but you can have a skinny body and it's absolutely not robust, it's not strong at all, but you look very lean and these kind of things, but you don't do your training. So again, focus rather on that building a strong body by doing exercise and training in a way that really keeps you going, keeps the habit, the routine of exercising, and it allows you to progress.
Yeah, sustainable way.
Yeah.
So on a similar note, you have on record spoken about how high the carbohydrate intake for Christian and Gustav is during racing, and that's maybe not quantified, but it is very high. And you've also measured their output during that, so you know what they're oxidizing, and you know that they are oxidizing that. How would you approach trying to engineer that in an age grouper, right? So is the advice to age groupers just keep bumping up your intake? Because we don't actually know what they're, you know, they can't test that like Christian and Gustav have. How would you approach that in an age grouper?
No, so the reason why I measure it is because we want to understand. We want to understand and we want to become smarter at what we do. And by smarter, I mean basically that when we measure things, then it's easier to understand when you are facing limitations and so on. If you just start feeding more and more carbohydrates, you can train yourself up to tolerate quite high concentrations of carbohydrates. But what is more important is to understand how can we build interventions, protocols, methods, and so on that allows us to train it effectively up. And that's also is actually periodization. Much in the same way as training of your muscles, you also periodize. You don't go out every day and train the hardest possible, because that's will make you stagnate fairly quickly.
Yep.
But when you periodize and you're being smart about it, this is basically when you allow for really good growth conditions. And the same thing goes also with carbohydrate uptake. The reason why we do all the measurements is to understand better what kind of protocols, or how do we develop the most effective protocols in order to increase carbohydrate uptake, because we have identified that that has a direct impact on performance on race day, but also in training conditions as well. For age grouper, I would say that probably the first problem you will face when you start to increasing your carbohydrate uptake is purely actually stomach problems.
Yeah. GI problems are the big risk, and that's where the advocates of a lower carbohydrate approach will push. They say, listen, it's a risky to take in carbs.
But risky for what? Yeah, if you have never used carb before and you take it on race day, surely then it can be a risk because you have no clue. But if you have been like systematically increasing your carbohydrate uptake, you do actually know what works for you and don't work for you. Mm-hmm. And then on race day, don't do something different than what you haven't done in training. You're just trying to do exactly what you found out was best practice for you. But this is the cool part of it as well, that it allows you to, like, doing experimentation is what you have to do in the end anyway. Yep. It's just that some tools allows you maybe to understand a little bit quicker or faster what you're doing. But I would say that is not the limitation. The limitation is rather that, like, we know that 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrate is absolutely not a limitation per hour. We have known this for a long time now.
Yep.
There are also now starting to come out research, of course, confirming this as well. We are not going to publish on our findings yet. We will probably do that sometimes between 2024 and 2028.
Yep.
But the ceiling is far higher, and we know that we haven't even reached the ceiling yet.
So you're seeing a training effect of increased carbohydrate intake driving increased carbohydrate uptake, because again, everything you put in your mouth doesn't get absorbed, because it's not absorbed till it leaves the gut.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing increased, at the top end, creates increased absorption and increased utilization. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. But also one thing that we have to remember is, because again, here it can be easy to get lost a little bit, because what you have to remember is that what drives ultimately uptake is also the need for it. So you need to create a need for that as well. That means also that it has to go hand in hand with your training as well. If you don't need 200 grams per hour of carbohydrates, because you're basically only utilizing 50 grams per hour, the likelihood for your body that the body will actually adapt to that is not very likely. So you actually have to create a demand, and then you have to feed it accordingly, because there's the demand is the output. So it has to start with the output, that you're creating a demand, and then you are feeding that demander. You can't feed and then hope there will be an output.
So you're talking about creating a vacuum model rather than creating a pushing model. So it's, you need to create a pull for the carbohydrate need rather than trying to push more in. So to intuit what you mean from that is, you are then using more carbohydrates on higher output days or higher intensity sessions, because that creates the vacuum to then help drive absorption, versus pushing carbohydrates on low intensity days where there's not going to be that same pull and you're trying to push them in more and it's going to create more GI stress. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, both yes and no, because one of the limitations for triathletes, as again, is also that you...
Total caloric intake.
That's one. And second, also being ready for the next high intensity session or medium to high intensity session. And if you are now, again, going into a faster state on your faster state, or you don't use carbohydrates, for example, on your long rides, the problem with that, again, is that the recent indication of glycogen in your muscles will happen at a slower rate as well, because you're at the same time as that is trying to take place, you're also expending carbohydrates as you are now even going your easy ride. There's no pure fat rides. Even if you try to induce it, there will still be carbohydrates being turned over, but of course you can train up your body to increase to use more fats. But on race day, as long as you don't have any particular issues or there are any problems limiting you from using carbohydrates on race day, I would not advise trying to increase it very much either. Because one of the problems we've seen is that for Christian Gustav, we have increased fat oxidation. This was a long time ago, but we have seen an increase in fat oxidation of maybe 30-40%. But the problem is that the moment you feed the body with carbohydrates, it will just switch over and use more carbohydrates, because it's not acutely, the body doesn't know what's going to happen half an hour down the road, one hour down the road. The body only senses what is going on exactly now.
Yep.
And it will always try to solve the task at hand exactly now, the cheapest possible way. This is one of the fundamental laws of nature as well. Yep. Stationary action principle. And that means also that acutely now, the limitation for you will ultimately be oxygen uptake. That will be the acute, that's the main limiting factor at this time here. Because it's not like you're gonna go, if you go all out now, you're not running out of fats, you're not running out of carbohydrates the next seconds.
You're running out of oxygen.
Exactly. So then the body will just have to switch automatically over to carbohydrates in order to be able to convert substrate into ATP quickly enough so that you actually can meet the demand that you actually are putting, the signaling demand that is that. You basically say, I want to go 600 watts now, for example, or 1,000 watts, whatever. And then there is a clear demand for energy there. And either you will come to a stop, meaning that the stimulus now is reduced, or you feed that demand there to provide a stronger stimulus, but then the body has also be able to supply that quickly enough, and that can't happen quickly enough with fats. You need a substrate that can be converted into joules much more or work ATP much more quickly, and that is done ultimately with carbohydrates.
Today's episode is provided by VO2 Master, your solution in making informed training decisions and unlocking advanced insights into human performance. Upgrade your training and metabolic assessments with the user-friendly VO2 Master Analyzer. VO2 Max, RMR, CPET, with the reliability, accuracy, and portability that you want. Use the code OLAVMETHOD, that's OLAVMETHOD, during checkout at VO2Master.com to get a free assessment kit with the purchase of your first VO2 Master Analyzer. We discussed carbohydrate utilization off air the other day and fat utilization, especially with low intensity stuff. And you were saying that there's heat production is a key issue and the difference between fat and carbohydrate oxidation. I think this is a really interesting point because this has implications for people trying to use a lower carbohydrate approach. So maybe let's just touch on that for a little bit, because I think that'll put a nice bow on this. We've talked about not doing a lot of fasted training because it provides a risk. You want growth stimulus. You need to have the calories there. We talked about driving carbohydrate utilization, how that works, all those things. But so perhaps the last little bow in the, or the bow on the present, so to speak, of your approach is why not so much fat, because of the heat production.
Yeah, so there is a useful component and a not so useful component. Important but not so useful component to burning calories and moving forward. The useful component is obviously those calories that we convert into mechanical power that allows us to propel forward. But then as a consequence of this, also as we do work, because we are not 100% efficient, we are rather the opposite. We are not very efficient. 20%, roughly speaking, for elites goes into mechanical work and 80% goes into heat. And then that mechanical work that you do, so let's say you are outputting one watt, for example, or 10 watts, what doesn't matter, but a watt. For that watt to be reduced, we can now convert it into joules. So 1 watt is basically 1 joule per second. And for you to be able to produce 1 joule per second, so we know that, for example, in 1 gram of fats, mm-hmm. are more than 9 calories.
Yep.
In 1 gram of carbohydrates, there are more than 4 calories. But mm-hmm. then you think, oh, wow, fats must be super efficient then, because it's more like more than twice the energy
yep.
in 1 gram of fat than it is in 1 gram of carbohydrates. Yeah, that's true. But the muscles doesn't use fats. They don't use carbohydrates. They basically use ATPs to do the work, or to be able, that's the currency the muscles need in order to do any work. But we need to convert, exactly, because we don't have a lot of ATPs in our body. We have a very small store of ATPs in our body. That means that we continuously have to supply more ATPs in order to continue to do work. So in order now to be able to produce more ATPs, we need to split molecules. Yep. So we have to split fat molecules or carbohydrate molecules into smaller substances. And in this process, we are releasing ATPs. But in order for that process to take place, we need oxygen. So there is an oxidation happening, or basically a combustion happening. So I'm going to try maybe to put this a little bit into physical context. Heat as well is work, is thermal work. And then you have mechanical work, which is the one that shows up on your power meter, but that is actually mechanical work. So there's thermal work and there's mechanical work, but it's basically the mechanical work that we see on a power meter, and we even don't see the full mechanical work either. We actually just see the mechanical component that actually contributes to propulsion. There's actually a gross mechanical power as well, because when you are pushing on your pedals, parts of the circle you are pushing actually in the direction, let's say in the direction of travel of the pedals, but actually pass off like a small part of also of the pedaling circle, you will actually brake, you will actually do opposing work, or actually you will push the pedal the wrong direction.
Yeah. And that's efficiency,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah, that's mechanical efficiency, yeah. Mechanical efficiency. So that's the difference between net mechanical power and gross mechanical power. And it's a net mechanical power that shows up on the power meter on the bike. From this net mechanical power, which basically is around 20% of a calorie, 80% of that is heat or thermal work. And the problem with fats versus carbohydrates is that in order to convert a calorie of fats into ATP, which again ultimately is a watt.
Yep. That's what we need to create watts.
Yep. 80% of that watt is heat, and 1% 20% of that is net mechanical power, and that's that 20% you see.
Yep.
You are gonna produce more heat actually by trying to convert 1 gram of fat into ultimately that mechanical watt,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to using carbohydrates, because it requires more oxygen, and you're getting less ATPs out of 1 gram of fat than what you get out of 1 gram of carbohydrates.
Isn't there more energy in fat though? Because we talked about it, you said 9 versus 4.
Yeah.
So you need to create roughly double, or you'd need to create roughly double from carbohydrates than fat, no?
But you need more than double. You need even more than double. Oxygen. You need more than double. So even if you take 9 and you divide it by 4, that's more like 2.23, something like this.
Yep.
But you need more than that in oxygen in order to do. And we know that basically for something to combust, to release some energy, you need oxygen and you need something to burn. And in this process, actually, there are more heat being produced in this process in order to convert it into ATP, as opposed to actually taking carbohydrates and converting that into ATP.
Yeah. So to say this a different way, because that's fairly technical and I think it's important. So when we have energy stored in the form of fat or carbohydrates, there are different amounts of energy per gram of that, right? The combustion of that requires different amounts of oxygen. And what we're ultimately looking at doing is pushing on the pedals, so to speak. When we push on the pedal, there's a portion of that energy or that power or whatever's produced there that is wasted, that we don't measure for most people unless they've got a newer power meter. And there's those two added together is roughly 20%. And the rest of that is lost as heat. Burning fat will create more heat in general than burning carbohydrates, because it's a less efficient process. Is that a fair summary of what you said?
Yeah. This is a little bit like the field of stoichiometry. So basically you're looking at like what comes out of a reaction, what are you producing out of a reaction, a chemical reaction. And so this is fairly easy to because again, if you have a fundamentalist view on this, you can also think that the whole body is just atoms, quarks, and even if you want to reduce even more prions. But if we focus on atoms, which is what we do when we are looking at stoichiometry, then you're looking at on it on a molecule level, and basically what happens when you are balancing or when you're taking, converting like one molecule into another form. And basically to produce one watt, we can here actually calculate how much oxygen is needed in this equation and how much fats are needed in this equation in order to get out, for example, X amount of joules in the other side of the equation. Now. Mm-hmm. And when you do this, you'll see that basically here in this equation here, that it takes, you are less of the potential energy that are in the molecule or the fat molecule combined with oxygen to convert it, actually ends up as joules, as opposed to if you're using carbohydrates and converting into joules. And that's why also, again, when we come back to fundamental laws of nature, one, we talk about heat now, for example,
yep.
But we said first of all, stationary action principle. So let's go the other way now. So if we start with stationary action principle, the body will always try to solve a task with the least possible energy involved in the process there. And that is by using carbs, especially when you go up to higher intensity, when you are starting to reach the limit of how much oxygen you can consume. This is also a place where now it gets a little bit more complicated, because this is about having a one-dimensional view versus a two-dimensional view, at least before we even go to three-dimensional. But you can say, yeah, but man, I have a VO2 max that maybe is 70 or 80 or these kind of things, and I'm only racing at 60% of that when I do an Ironman. No. You are not. That is the one-dimensional view of it. Because if I take you straight to a lab, at the moment you come over the finish line and I do a V2 max test of you, you will see that your utilization is close to maximum. Your VO2 max is not what it was at the starting line. And this is basically the static, or let's say incomplete view very often we take on looking at performance and how we're using things. Because then you can say, but that's not a problem early in the race. Well, if you start to expend more energy earlier in your race, or as you're using a high utilization, you just said, I have plenty of good working on, because I know that when I'm fresh, then I test very high on my VO2 max. You have to remember, this is a part of pacing. It's not that you can create any energy during your race. Your energy that you can actually maximally take in and utilize during a race is given, is finite. And if you start to do poor pacing in the beginning, because you basically end up with a poor strategy in the beginning that ends up utilizing poor fuels, other things that are heating your body up earlier in the race, that means that you will have less in reserve towards the end of the race, meaning also you will race less than your optimal pacing or velocity towards the end of the race as well. This is far more complicated than most people very often think of it, because it's not one-dimensional. This is multidimensional. And that's where very often these systems fail. But when you go in a lab and you test fresh, I have this VO2 max. No, you don't. That's when you are in this state. And that's not the same when you test at the end of a race. Then the picture would be very, very different. And I'm not talking about testing 5 minutes or half an hour after your test. You basically go straight on the turbo and you test it at the moment you come over the finish line there. This is when you test it, because this is what gives you. Because the body is really quick
reestablishing homeostasis.
Yeah, right. Homeostasis. Yeah. So again, you're looking at starting out the race in a way that allows you to finish the strongest possible, where you can keep things as even as possible, so you can basically just fall over the finish line with the best possible peak human performance that is there, not where you start out with a poor strategy in the beginning that you end up suffering from the last half hour, last 15 minutes, maybe worst case, the last 4 hours, because you didn't take this into account or you didn't understand this. So again, coming back to fats and carbs and fasted and non-fasted and all these kind of things, I think it is very important for people to understand that there is a reason for why we end up using carbohydrates at higher intensity, because it is the easiest source to convert into ATPs. Convert into power, watts, speed, velocity. It's the easiest source. It costs the least. It will cause less heating of the body as well, purely from, yes, you will heat faster when you go faster, but that's for other reasons, not because you're burning carbs. And that's also one of the things to have in mind as well, that when you are then forcing yourself to basically burn more fats instead, for example, that's all good, maybe in some perspective, but for peak human performance, I can say that any sports that basically are using thinking that, yeah, well, I'm doing ultra, I'm doing 100K races or 160K runs, or I'm doing the race across America or something like that. Mm-hmm. At the moment we come in there and we start to tune our athletes to use carbohydrates, we're going to break your records. Simple as that. Carbs are the king, finito.
It's an awesome way to finish that episode. I think it'll be very challenging for some people. I think it'll get a lot of people talking. So thank you so much for your time, Olaf. Really appreciate it. And that's the end of another episode of the Norwegian Method Podcast. Thank you very much. Wow. Nutrition. All things nutrition. I'm sure that one will be popular. That one will be shared. So be one of those people. Share it with a friend who you think would find it interesting. Of course, if you haven't yet, please rate the podcast and subscribe to it. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next week, where we'll be covering all things technology and culture. And of course, please do put in your questions, if you have them, via Instagram DM to the Centara Tech Instagram account, via email to info@centaragroup.com. And of course, if you're on Spotify, put it into the question and answer section there. Thank you so much. We will see you next week.
The Norwegian Method.